Okay, I want to know how many of you were at the 8 o'clock service. Good. How many of you had seen the YouTube video that Dr. Ashcroft had talked about? Okay. Are you aware that the report is the woman is suing? And she is suing because the security guards who were around laughed instead of coming immediately to her help. I noticed on Fox News that when they reported that, they were all very straight-faced for approximately 4 seconds, and they all burst out laughing and said maybe she'll sue Fox News too. My question about that is to find out if you saw the other YouTube video that's been circulating. Did you see the flood video in the parking lot in Australia? Have you seen that one? Somebody's in an office building. Maybe it's got a parking garage under it. It's not clear. You're probably 3 stories up. You're looking down, and there is a row of cars, a driving space, and then the edge of the building that, you know, the camera's looking down, looking at this. And the camera turns and looks up to the right, and there is a small bridge. And under the bridge is a little creek, and the creek is maybe as wide as 3 or 4 of our chairs. And muddy water is flowing down through the creek. And not every place is occupied down through here, but most of them are. Okay? As they continue to watch, the water gets deeper and wider. It finally begins to lap at the front tires of the cars along here. It finally gets to where it's running up against the cars up here. It finally begins to float those cars away. And about that time, somebody comes running out from this side to a place almost in the middle to a white Land Rover. He's going through water almost up to his knees. He opens the car, turns on the key, drives away. And by the time the video is gone, is over, all the cars that you had seen have been washed down this road. If that guy's nickname is not from now on Noah, it seems to me it should. I want to know if you haven't seen that. I don't know how to go and look it up because I don't think they're going to say Noah in a white Land Rover, but you know, Australia creek parking lot, something like that may show it to you. It's a very, very interesting thing. So I want to talk, first of all, we are in the process of looking into the section of Scripture that talks about the flood. That's chapter 6, chapter 7, chapter 8 of Genesis. I don't think it's possible for us ever to do 3 chapters in one day, but hey, who knows? And what I want to do for just a moment, if I can, is to ask you if you can figure out a timeline for the flood itself. I'm going to take you into chapter 7. Look at verse 1. The Lord said to Noah, "Go aboard the ark, you and all your household. For you alone of your contemporaries do I see before me as an upright man." And then goes on to tell him about the animals that he's to take in. There's some people who make commentary about this who say, oh, this is a place where the Bible is self-contradictory because now he's telling, God is telling him to take 7 of males and 7 females from each of these animals when before he said 1 male and 1 female. Other commentators responded to this and pointed out there's a specification here of clean animals and there is a sacrifice that he will make when all of this is over. And if you sacrifice the only male you have, the only female you have, there's no more of those. If you back up for a moment to verse 13, the preliminary for this, God said to Noah, "I have decided that the end has come for all living things, for the earth is full of lawlessness because of human beings. Now I'm about to destroy them and the earth. Make yourself an ark out of resinous wood." And then he describes how to make it. Verse 17, "For my part, I'm going to send the flood, the waters on earth, to destroy all living things that have the breath of life under heaven. Everything on earth is to perish, but with you I will." And he doesn't say, save you from the flood. What does he say? Establish with you a covenant. So that's a piece I'd like you to keep an eye on. Back down here, Noah said, go aboard the ark. What happened after God said, go aboard the ark? If you take a look at verse 10 of chapter 7, it suggests something. What does it suggest? It was 7 days later. Mine says, the waters of the flood appeared on the earth. Okay? Now, if you look at the tail end of verse 16, start of verse 17, it sounds like they didn't close the doors until then. There are differences of opinion on this, but assuming that you accept what the Bible record talks about, which I suggest is a smart thing to do, it looks like Noah goes on board, Noah, etc., that is his wife, his family, go on board, and then the flood begins. It looks like that is 7 days. Do you agree with that? Okay. Now, how long did the flood last? Blood lasted 40 days. Somebody else says 190 days.
Well, it rained.
Somebody else says almost 375 days.
Verse 24 says
150 days. 150 days. And I'm drawing this to your attention so that you will be armed with the information that there are slightly different sets of numbers saying something, and the question is, what are they saying? I don't want to spend a lot of time on this. I don't want to make a big deal of this, but I do want to arm you with having examined what's here. Okay? When it says the flood lasted 40 days, what does that mean? It clearly says back over here, verse 14 of chapter 8, on the second month, in the 27th day of the month, the earth was, and you can install the word finally if you wish, dry. Does everybody see verse 8, verse 14 in chapter 8? Right? Okay. If you take a look, and I'm supposed to know where this was. Well, I'm not finding it now, and I should have written it down. Somewhere in here it says that the flood started on the second month, on the 17th day. 7-11, thank you. 7-11, what a great verse. In the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, on the 17th day of the month, what happened? Water starts coming from everywhere. It comes from above, it comes from below, it comes sideways, it comes front ways and back ways, and it comes from everywhere. When it says the flood lasted 40 days, I think, I'm not certain, but I think it means the water kept coming for 40 days. When it says over in verse 4, after 150 days the water fell, I don't know if that's 150 days in addition to the 40 days, or if that's including the 40 days. The water kept going, coming in for 40 days. It stayed up and didn't start to recede for a total of 150 days, counted some way or another. Okay. It then says, you all help me find it, chapter 8, verse 13. In the 601st year of Noah's life, in the first month, on the first day of the month, the water began drying out on the earth. I don't know if that meant the water was low enough down that you could start to see land and water. Have you seen land after a really bad flood? You know, it starts to go down and pockets of it remain at various places, and finally all those pockets are gone. I think that's what it's talking about. I get 375 because when it goes to verse 14 of chapter 8, it says second month, 27th day. If you go back to 7-11, is it that you said? Said second month, 17th day. That's 1 year plus 10 days that the flood was going on. Okay?
All right, so
verse 5 in chapter.
Yes, verse 5.
Yeah, I was gonna show you that. That actually it indicates that the tops of the mountains began to be seen later than that. The seventh month, on the 17th day of the month, the ark came to rest on the mountains. The first day of the 10th month, the mountaintops appeared. you have a feeling that it was resting on the mountaintops, but the mountaintops weren't yet out from under the water. That seems to be what it's saying. However, you read through this, if you accept the Bible record as giving you a picture of what had happened, there is a time period that's a little more than a year. Within that time period, 40 days is prominent, 150 days is prominent, some other things are prominent. You can trace it by month and date, or you can trace it by how many days. And I want you to recognize that if somebody says, how long did the flood last, there's going to be some people who say 40 days. Thank you for saying that. I think there is a part of the flood for which that's an accurate description. There's some who are going to say 150 days because that's how long it took before you started to see some land reappear. Okay. This was a long, drawn-out process. So, how did it start? What would it have looked like to the people at the time? I think that video out of Australia was interesting. My car is parked there. A little bit of water running down the stream. Why should I be concerned? I got a question. Somebody's at the window with a camera. You see the water rising. Where are the people that belong to those cars? Now, a thought comes. Where were the people that belonged to those cars?
They rushed in that building.
Presumably they were in that building. Why didn't they rush out and move their car?
Didn't know
they had to. Didn't know they needed to. Nobody told them. Does that sound interesting? When did God tell Noah that all this was going to happen? This is a pop quiz. If you weren't here last week, don't sweat it. But if you were here last week, you should know this. How long was it? There is a little bit of debate here, although I can't see how that debate resolves itself the other way. I think it's 100 years. When he was 500, I think God told him. That's the way I read the Bible record. When he was 600, the flood came. I count that as 100 years. There are a couple of commentators out there who say 120, and I don't know why they say that. Someday I'm going to find out why they said that. Maybe I'll agree with them, maybe I won't. But right now, 100 years. But fine, 100 years, 120 years, take your choice. He is out there building this boat for 100 years. Now, we did this last week. I want to do it again just for a second because I want to make sure you hear this twice. What would have happened the first year for the people around Noah? What would have been their reaction? They would have been intense curiosity. And I think the group that was curious would have had one of two very different responses. What are the two responses?
Nuts.
One would be, you're nuts. Very well put. Right? Uh-huh. Or, he's nuts because you probably won't want to talk to the nutty guy. Okay? What's the other response?
Why are you doing it?
There might be silent pondering. Is there something to this? Uh-huh. Is there something to this? Okay. What happens in year two?
The second group gets smaller.
Same thing. And the group that's pondering says, well, didn't happen yet. Wonder if I should still be worried. What happens in year 10?
Same thing.
What happens in year 60? What happens in year 80? What happens in year 99? What happens in year 99 and 11 months in?
They're probably not even looking at it anymore.
Jesus said at some place in the New Testament, people went on eating and drinking, giving in marriage, right up until the flood came. And the implication is they never saw it coming. Did they see it coming? Yeah. Because Noah witnessed to it.
Think about Noah all those years, too. What was he thinking all those years? Maybe the first year. Yes.
Isn't it interesting how the thing I want to talk about next sometimes comes up? Exactly. Exactly. We got to finish with this first, but then we're going to turn around and look the other direction, right? What happens? They've heard, but it didn't happen. Why did I take you to 2 Peter last week? You weren't here for me to take you to 2 Peter. Some of you weren't. But I took you to 2 Peter last week, chapter 3. Everything's going on just like it was when our fathers were here. Where's all this talk?
This is about time.
And what did Peter say? It is not God failing to do what he said. It is what? Pop quiz. God being patient with you, not wanting anyone to be lost, wanting everyone to be saved. You remember that? So what happened to the people? One by one, they simply said, nothing to it. Idiots out there building his boat, nothing ever going to come from it. When did Noah go into the boat? Certain day. When did the flood come?
7 days
later. What happened in those 7 days? Number one, I don't know, and you don't either. I got to start there, and I probably have to stay there one more moment. I don't know, you don't either. But what do you think happened in those days? I think the front end of it came. I think they saw some rain. Maybe not the let it all go where it seems like somebody's just opened a giant spigot and faucet over every square foot of land. But I think it started. And I think some of them said, maybe there was something to this. But I think Noah was already closed. I don't really know what to do with that thought. Jesus said he's coming again, and when that day comes, that's a day of judgment. And Jesus said people are going to be eating and drinking all these things right up until that time too, just like they did way back then. What does it take to have a faithful, honest witness believed when God delays because of his patience? I don't have an answer to that. I simply let you know I think there's a record of it here. Okay? Now, let's turn to the other question. What did Noah think? What did Noah think on year, at the end of year one? I think he would have thought, boy, I hope it doesn't come yet because I'm not finished. I'm not finished. Okay? Does that lead you to a question? I hope it does. Let's try that again. At the end of year one, what was Noah thinking? I suggest he might have been thinking, boy, I'm glad the flood didn't come yet because I'm not quite finished. What does that lead you to?
When is it going? How long do
the day may have come that the ark was finished and ready, and it didn't come. I think Noah's faith was tested. How long was it tested? I don't know. How long would you think it would have taken him to finish the boat? I don't know how much help he had. I can't imagine him moving some of the beams that had to be in there without some help. But maybe he could hire some help.
He was 500
years old. I think 500 years old was middle. You know, it's not as old as some people are. It's not as old as some people are. But I think it was, you know, middle age, vigor, and all this kind of stuff.
But you got something. You don't really know that he started when he was 500. Because it says when he was 500, he became the father of Shem.
We don't know. We don't know.
It could have happened at any time between that point.
He could have been younger than 500. He could have been older than 500. Most people think 500, and I don't know why. A few think 120, and I really don't know why. But 100 sounds right to me because that would extend it so that the things Jesus commented about it and yet Noah's witness both would have been out there. Okay? Let's stay on this a minute longer. As the flood was ending, what did Noah do? I invite your attention to chapter 8, verse 5. The first day of the 10th month, the mountaintops appeared. Mine then says, at the end of 40 days, I'm assuming that's 40 days from the point where the mountaintops appeared. What did he do? Open the door, open the hatch, open the window. Had a window? Sent out what?
A raven.
A what?
Yeah, it says a raven.
Boy, there's a spiritual bird. I don't understand that one for a minute. But it seems to imply at almost the same time. He sent the raven out. What did the raven do? Flew back and forth. Okay. And it implies the raven came back, although in my translation it doesn't say so. What did he do? Mine says he then, which to me sounds like the same day, he did what? Sent out a dove. And what happened? Verse 9 uses the word perch. Didn't find a place to perch, so he came back. He waited 7 more days. Says he put out his hand and took hold of the dove. I guess if you've been locked up in there for all that time, maybe the dove had begun to trust Noah a little bit. Or maybe that's another piece that we don't understand. Anyway, it says, verse 10, 7 more days, released the dove from the ark. In the evening, the dove came back. And what was in his beak? That is a symbol of something. Symbol of peace is the dove with an olive branch. You don't see a hawk or an eagle. You may see an eagle with olive branch in one and lightning bolts in another. I think that's a symbol I've seen before, right? But this is a symbol. After verse 12 says, after waiting 7 more days, that's 2 weeks now, releases the dove, and what happens? It doesn't come back. And that's the point when he says he lifted the hatch, verse 13, and looked out. The surface of the ground was dry. And then it says a little bit later, the earth was dry. I don't know the difference between those two. Okay?
What I think is interesting is that God sealed him in.
We're coming to that. Yeah. No, that's fine. That's fine. There's just about 10 things that I want to go through and make sure we notice. And you're calling attention to one. Let's mark that. We're going to come back and look at that. The question I'm going to ask you in a few minutes is, who shuts the door? And it's very, very interesting what the Bible says about that. I can't tell when God shut the door. I have a feeling God shut the door on day one, and 7 days went by where people might be banging on the door saying, wait a minute, maybe we should be in there. But and that's the part I think has theological significance and theological meaning. But that's for you to ponder, Jerry.
One question. How many months made a Jewish year, and how long was a Jewish month?
First answer is I don't know. Second answer is I don't know. Third answer is I think 12 and I think 30.
Okay.
More or less.
Okay. Thank you.
I don't think they started at the same time that our year starts. I don't think they start on what we would call January 1.
No, they start September.
That's what I think. Okay, now, what I want to do is I want you to notice a few things. What did the ark represent before the flood? I'm taking you back some period of time. Lejeune carefully chides us on being locked into 100 years. And that is a chiding that I will accept. But some, I think, extended period of time went by. During that time, the people around saw the ark. Noah saw the ark. What did the ark itself represent in that period of time?
The people to Noah.
Obedience to Noah. Okay. Trust.
Folly to the people.
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am.
A future refuge. Salvation.
Okay, let me state what we have so far. To Noah, obedience, trust, a future refuge, salvation. To the people, so far you have put down folly and foolishness.
Waste of materials and a waste of time.
Every once in a while I watch my students get locked into one way of thinking, and they explore that one thing just so wonderfully and so sufficiently, but they don't step over and take a parallel road. I wonder if that can have any meaning in a second or two. Yeah. Thank you. Okay. That's one of the ones that is in a somewhat different vein. That's in a little bit different track. Okay. Somebody said something else.
Curiosity.
curiosity. I'm going to put that one back up here, but it's a variation on these. These represent conclusion. Curiosity represents, I haven't formed a decision yet, but I think there's something going on here I ought to think about. And curiosity is a little bit too small a word to bear all that weight, but it's the best I can do right now.
Would they be judgmental?
I think this up here would represent.
Would Noah think security?
Physical safety.
I think that's what he wanted.
Yeah, I think it represents security.
I, you know, I'm hoping that.
Physical safety, hope. What does it represent to the people? Because you haven't said some big ones yet. It represents testimony. It represents witness. It represents warning. And that's why this one's so important. Testimony, witness, warning. All of which leads to a decision point, and most of the people made that decision. Made the decision to simply conclude it's foolishness. He's nuts.
I think testimony and witness really go under Noah as well.
But that's not what it represented to Noah. It's what Noah represented to the people. Or at least that's what I'm suggesting. What would the people have seen? They would have seen testimony. They would have seen witness. They would have seen warning. Now, from Noah's side, I think you can put all of that here, but I would like to suggest you place it under obedience. He's doing what God asked him to do, and what he's asked him to do represents a testimony, a witness, a warning, and maybe some other words like that.
But isn't that what people should have seen, but that's not what they did? In other words, they should have seen testimony, should have seen witness.
I think there might have been 7 days in which they figured out what they had been seeing all along.
Finally, ultimately, it represented death for the people that did. Because they were let down.
Didn't want to change.
Not so much death, but it represented a choice. Okay? I want you to look forward into the Old Testament. Look forward into the Old Testament. The whole book of Deuteronomy. You got to make a choice. You can choose to follow the Lord. You can choose to ignore the Lord. You can choose to obey the Lord. You can choose to rebel against the Lord. You got a choice you got to make. I think it was Joshua, as for me and my house, we will do this, but you guys got to choose. I think it's less representing death than representing a choice between those two, and a choice that unfortunately there were people who did not recognize that that choice was there. Okay?
By the same token, I think it may have also represented grief.
That's good. I hadn't spotted that, but absolutely right. Grief. When the testimony of the witness were so widely ignored.
Frustration.
It has to have represented grief and frustration. And I think probably it would have tested the trust. Why am I doing all this if the warning's being ignored? So,
do you think he realized he was making a testimony?
Great question. What do you think? Do you think he realized he was making a testimony? Providing a witness? He's described in the New Testament as a person who was a preacher. Okay. I think he did. God said to one of his prophets, as that prophet was just beginning, he says, "Now I'm going to put you out to speak my word to the people, but they ain't going to listen. And you're going to have to live with that." And I think that's the prophet we call the weeping prophet. Because he knew what his people needed to hear, and he was saying it as clearly as he knew how, and almost everybody was ignoring him. And walking right off the cliff as they did so.
Why do you think he only warned Noah and not all the people?
Oh, I do not think he warned only Noah and not all the people. I think he warned Noah, and through Noah, I think he warned all the people. Because Has anybody made the connection I'm trying to get you to make?
Well, Christ was there.
Jesus is coming again.
Yeah.
Jesus is coming again. There's a day of judgment that's coming. God is warning the people about that. How is he doing that? How is he doing that? Pop quiz for longtime members of this group. What does Myers consider to be the most frightening words in the whole of the Old Testament? Ezekiel. Want to go there with me? Because you just called it back to mind. Isaiah, Jeremiah, Lamentations, Ezekiel, Daniel. Go to Ezekiel. Go to chapter 36. This sir, directly relates to your comment. Directly relates to your comment.
What's the chapter
36? Ezekiel chapter 36. I want to run up to the verse that I'm interested in, but I'm going to start at verse 21 to give you a context. God is speaking. And here's what he says to the prophet. I have been concerned about my holy name, which the house of Israel has profaned among the nations where they have gone. What would the prophet have said? The prophet would have said, great, I've been concerned about that too. And so say to the house of Israel, the Lord of hosts says this, I am not acting for your sake, house of Israel, but for the sake of my holy name, which you have profaned among the nations where you have gone. I am going to display the holiness of my great name. My great name which has been profaned among the nations, my great name which you have profaned among the nations. And the nations will know that I am the Lord. Now, if it stopped there, it wouldn't be frightening. It doesn't stop there. I am going to display the holiness of my great name when in you I display my holiness before their eyes. How are people supposed to know about the Lord? How are people supposed to know about all that's going on? They're supposed to see that through the lives. Their eyes see us. We are supposed to be a witness, a testimony, and, when appropriate, a warning. And so few of us don't do that well. The key verse is verse 23. I'm going to display the holiness of my great name, and then it ends with, when I display it through you, in you. Chapter 36, verse 23. Ezekiel 36, 23. If anybody ever thinks God only revealed things to Noah and not to anybody else, I think you miss what Noah was doing. Every hammer blow on the nails that went into the ark, every saw stroke, all those animals herded into the fields right around it before they all went on board. Because I don't think Noah went out and got them. I think they came in at the Lord's command. And here they were, all coming in, all coming together. And all that becomes a, what is going on here? What is going on here? Is it foolishness? Is it insanity? Is it craziness? Well, no, it's decision time.
I wonder if they ever ask him, the people that even ask Noah, what are you doing? What is this all about?
I think there is no way on earth that they didn't ask.
I would think so.
And there's no way on earth he didn't say.
So, in other words, he could have told them that something bad was going to happen, and they still didn't.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's walk through a few things to just notice, okay? Let's walk through a few things. Since we've had one mention, let's go ahead and deal with that one. Who closed the door? That is an extremely interesting phrase. I don't know what it means in fullness, but there's one thing it does mean, and that's what I've written in the biggest letters on the board. There is a security that is here. That same security is implied in the judgment that's coming when Jesus comes back. I don't understand it. I don't fathom it. It all deals with grace because it sure doesn't deal with justice. And the sermon of the day deals with the heart of that. So number?
I think this is also a spiritual security. It's not just physical. So, you know, we're talking about
grace. I think you are seeing physical security as a picture
right.
of spiritual
representative,
security.
Representative of.
Yeah.
Right.
Although they sort of all blend together at this point, you know.
They are, yeah.
And it's interesting that as the animals came, you know, the lions and the lambs, and there was no hunting between...
Lou Jane, you want to jump in here? Doesn't say that. Might have been a few more lambs came in and the lions got a few. Doesn't say that. I would like to think that. That would make a beautiful picture and a more clear testimony. I don't know that that's necessarily so. I think the lions would still be hungry and would probably be tempted to take food the way they usually did. I don't think they would suddenly start eating hay. Maybe that's why there were seven.
Who led them on the
ark? I don't know who led them on, but I think God led them to. I don't think Noah sent people out to bring them in. Okay. But in terms of leading them on, do you have something to look at? I don't have a very good answer right now.
Well, it says here, and they went into the ark to Noah. To Noah.
What verse?
15.
7.
15.
In verse 8, it says that pairs of clean and unclean came to Noah and him of the ark.
Okay, mine does not have verbs that match up with that, but that I think is a more accurate translation that you're saying. God's hand is in all of this, and I think fair-minded people who weren't clouded by the instant response of judgment back here would have seen in this something to really be concerned about, if not to respond to. And yet, it seems like almost no one did. Okay?
Repent, the world is at hand.
Uh-huh. Now, let me take you to a place I think is very... It's not the only one. It's not the most interesting, because there isn't the most interesting. You have to decide which one you think is most interesting. But I do want to take you to Exodus chapter 1. What does that have to do with the ark, Myers? Well, let's see. Exodus chapter 1. Exodus chapter 1, verse 8. Joseph has saved the people. And what does it say in verse 8? There came to power in Egypt a new king who had never heard of Joseph. And what happens? All the people went into slavery. But they kept on multiplying. So around verse 15... The king said, when you attend Hebrew women in childbirth, if it's a boy, kill him. If it's a girl, let her live. But midwives didn't do what they were supposed to do. So the king of Egypt summoned the midwives and said, what do you mean by allowing the boys to live? And the midwives said, well, not our fault. These boys are born so strong, they don't wait for the midwife to get there. We weren't even there. Don't blame us. Okay. So verse 22, Pharaoh gave his people a command. What was the command? Throw every newborn boy into the river, into the Nile. Let the girls live. Everybody see that? Mm-hmm. Chapter 2, verse 1. Moses is born. You don't know his name yet, but that's who it is. Verse 2. His mother, seeing what a fine child he was, kept him hidden for 3 months. When she could hide him no longer, what did she do? She threw him into the river. In what? Nope. King James gets it right. Anybody got King James? Put him into an ark. Put him into an ark. Same word. Same word. This one made of bulrushes, the other one made of wood. Same word.
Covered with tar and pitch.
Covered up, hatch closed, off he went. Very interesting parallel. All right. Let's see. Go back to Genesis. Something else to take a look at. Genesis chapter 7. Actually doing okay on time today. Chapter 7, they get into the boat, right? chapter 7, verse 17. Here comes the flood. I want to know the verbs that are applied to the boat. What happens to the ark?
Lift it up.
Above the earth.
Lift it up, and then it's got some modifiers. Lift it up above the earth.
So that it rose.
The second verb, it floated above. What's the third verb? Not sure what to do with this, but I think this is a fascinating little thing to look at as long as we're here. There is a third verb. Okay. I'm looking at the tail end of verse 18. It's all in verse 17 and 18. Verse 17, the ark was lifted. The ark floated off the ground. Verse 18, tail end of verse 18, the waters rose, swelling higher above the ground, and the ark verb. What's the verb? Mine says lifted and floated all in verse 17. Yours says moved at this point. Moved. Mine says drifted away. Yours says moved. I think moved may be better. Okay. What's the implication? The ark did not just go up and down as the flood came. What did it do? Went to some new place. Went to some new place. I don't know what to do with that, but I think there's something there to ponder. And I encourage you to ponder it with me. What would the people of the area have been doing while the boat was lifted? How much water would it take to lift the boat? There's a parallel here, and I'm hesitant, but not hesitant enough to just stop. I'm going to do it, but I probably shouldn't. There's a friend of mine who had a sunfish. Some of you who spend time on the bay, do you know what a sunfish is? 12-foot, 13-foot, 14-foot sailboat, right? Doesn't have a cabin down below. You don't spend the night on a sunfish, if I understand correctly. Is that right? He had a close friend named Harvey, my friend did. Harvey could not swim and therefore resisted all the invitations to go sailing with my friend. But finally one day, my friend wore him down and off they went. They put out at a place which I think is one of the most delightful names that I know of on the Chesapeake Bay. It put him off of Stingray Point. Isn't that a great name? Are there stingrays at Stingray Point? I think of stingrays as... But anyway, put off. And they were probably better than a quarter of a mile offshore. Wind caught the sunfish, flipped the boat, Harvey's out in the water. Okay? Harvey is flailing his arms, kicking his legs, screaming in terror, "Oh God, oh God, oh God, I'm going to die. Help me, help me, help me, help me."
And all he had to do was stand up.
Harvey was 6'2". My friend was 5'6". My friend was watching this with the water kind of here, standing there just watching this as Harvey flailed away. Okay. Finally, after a few moments, he screamed, "Harvey!" No effect. Screamed again, "Harvey!" Harvey stops, looks at him in absolute anger and puzzlement, and says, "What?" And my friend says, "Stand up." On Harvey, the water came to a bed. I'm not trying to make light of something. I am trying to make a point. God gives us a place to stand, and we refuse to stand on it. I don't know how to perfectly connect that story to this story, but I think I need you to hear them side by side. We can drown in 4 feet of water if we don't realize we have a place to stand. This wasn't that. This was a lot worse than that. This story is not funny. This story is tragic beyond tragic. The story of Harvey is funny. But there's a little point to be made. God gives you a place to stand and you refuse to stand there. I think I'd rather stand over here where it's 50 feet deep. God says, why don't you stand over here? Where you can stand up. And even when the floods come, they don't come over you. Chapter 8, verse 1. There are several different translations for the verb in here. God, my translation says, had Noah in mind. The flood is at its worst. This is the middle of the flood story. This is the middle of that list of what was going on. But God had Noah in mind. Another translation says God remembered Noah. That doesn't mean, oh, he had forgotten and now he remembered. No. It's like a mother picking up a picture of her son. She has never forgotten her son. But now she's focusing her attention on her son as she thinks about her son. God remembered Noah. Do you see that verb? Is there a different phrase in yours that brings up
his attention?
Had not forgotten. Not bad. And yours says his attention.
Turned
his attention to Noah. Now, what did God do? The flood didn't end because the flood ended. The flood ended because God took steps to make it end. I, again, don't understand what details are being presented here because they're not being presented in a way to help me understand details. They're being presented in such a way to help me understand God's role in it. Now, I want to start something today, and we will finish it. We'll do more next time. Chapter 6. Verse 18. What did God say? With you I will establish my covenant. Verse 8. Chapter 8, excuse me. Verse 15. God said to Noah, come out of the ark, you, your wife, your sons' wives with you. Bring out all the animals with you, all the living things, all the bird, all the cattle, all the creeping things, for them to swarm on the earth, to breed and multiply. Verse 20. The Lord, Noah built an altar to the Lord, and choosing from among the clean animals and clean birds, he presented burnt offerings on the altar. Verse 21, there's a little bit of anthropomorphizing going on here. The Lord smelled the pleasing smell and said to himself, never again will I curse the earth because of human beings. Never again will I strike down every living creature as I have done. Chapter 9, verse 1, all the way through verse 17 is the detail of the covenant. There is a covenant that God makes with Noah. Different people count it different ways. Different people count it different ways. By my count, this is the first of the five covenants of the Old Testament. What does this covenant provide? It's in big letters.
Security.
What's the symbol? Verse 17, chapter 9. The rainbow. The symbol is not the dove with the olive branch. The symbol is the rainbow. Was this the first time rainbows had ever appeared on earth? Some commentators think so. Or was this the first time that the connection had been made between these? There are four covenants to go, and next week we're going to just pause and we're going to look ahead through the Old Testament. We're going to look at those covenants. We're going to look at what they are, who they're with, what they represent. However, to prepare you for that, I want to report to you that my wife is a kindergarten teacher. And I've learned some things from her. What does a kindergarten teacher, a good one, do with the children in the first couple of weeks? She makes sure that those kids know something. What do they know? They know they are in a safe place. They know their name. They know where they live, address, phone number, things like this. and they know that they're beginning to be shown what the boundaries are, what they can do, what they can't do. That's the first three covenants, because everybody has that same need. This is the covenant of security. We're coming to Moses. There's a covenant of boundaries. In between is Abraham, the covenant of name and place. There's two more beyond that, but that's what we're going to do next time. I don't know how to tell you, get ready for next week, because there's lots, way too many places for me to send you. But just, if you have access to a search program, you can go online and go to Bible Gateway. You can go to some of the little things that I see some people have cell phones and stuff. Search for the word covenant and just see if you can find some of the places that they are. One is with Abraham, so look around the middle of Genesis. One is with Moses, so look in Exodus. And then there's two more. All right? Let's have a word of prayer as we go this morning. Our Father, we thank you for what you have shown us. We thank you most of all that it is so clear that while you have standards that you expect us to meet, you still have love and mercy, and that you do make provisions for security for those who respond to you, who are trying to be in obedience to you. We begin to understand that obedience and trust is the heart of a right relationship with you. And so today I pray that in my heart and in the heart of these good people here, that your Spirit would move and work to bring us to the level of trust where obedience is natural, and a level of obedience that leads us even when sight is gone and faith is all we have to help us see where to go. I pray all these things in your Son's name. Amen.